Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Some audio open lines straight ahead for this last half hour. I wish it were a half hour. It's just an hour, isn't it? What time is it? It's an hour, right? I should know these kind of things. Should be paying attention. The next hour of the program is audio open lines. What we do is we'll play some audio for you. You can react to it. There's an interesting thing here on, you heard about this. I heard it about a couple weeks ago, and there's some Men on the Street audio I want to play for you on how people are more familiar with the ingredients of a Big Mac. I think it's the Big Mac. Yeah, more familiar with the ingredients of a Big Mac than they are with the Ten Commandments. You know, this is America, the Christian nation. This is America where Christians, if they aren't out protesting the fact that they don't have the Ten Commandments posted at a school or a courthouse, might sympathize with that view. I remember we talked with Cal Thomas some months back, and he said, whenever he hears someone whining about the Ten Commandments not being here or not being there, the first thing he says to him is, name them. Name them, the Ten Commandments. Now, it shouldn't come as any surprise that, and we're talking about Christians here, should it come as any surprise that people who consider themselves Christians can't name the Ten Commandments? Something that's considered part and parcel of what it means to be an American or be a Christian, can't name them. Oh, they want them in the courthouse, but they can't name them. While they can name the ingredients of a popular fast food ingredients. Well, we'll play the audio for you, and then I want to hear what you think about it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What I find most interesting about when people on the street try and name the Ten Commandments is the ones they name. Just listen to this and tell me if you don't catch something in here. They do a fair job. Sometimes people generally get about six or seven of them, which isn't hard to do considering that all you got to do is think through the big things that people consider to be sin, murder, stealing, lying. And you've covered three already. Lie, cheat, steal. That's a country song. That's not the Ten Commandments yet. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org.
All right, two all-beef patty special sauce, you know the rest. In fact, there's been a recent poll that shows that only 14% of Americans can name the Ten Commandments, but twice that many can name the ingredients in a Big Mac. We are outside in Midtown Manhattan right now to see if some unsuspecting commuters know some of the Ten Commandments.
Allison, Steve. What's your name?
George Armanitis.
Where are you going? Are you in a hurry?
You're going to work.
Okay, good.
Okay, can you name some of the Ten Commandments, George?
Sure. Thou not steal, thou not kill, thou shalt obey thy mother and father, thou shalt honor Sundays. I can't remember the exact language.
That's five so far.
That's good. Keep going.
Okay, I'm running out of...
something about a neighbor's wife?
No clue. No.
I don't have that.
Oh, that covered that neighbor's wife. Yeah.
You want to familiarize yourself with that one. Uh-huh. Can you name the ingredients in a Big Mac?
Two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
Ding, 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 ding. You actually know some of both of those. You know all of the Big Macs, many of the commandments. Nicely done, George.
Hey, Allison, yes. Right over here, we've got a family. How are you today?
Doing good.
Hey, can we ask your son a question?
Okay.
All right, very good. What's your name?
Jack.
Okay, Jack.
Jack, Allie, where are you guys visiting from?
Good idea.
Oh, you live here. Okay, I thought that the suitcase threw me. Jack, have you ever heard of the Ten Commandments?
No.
Okay, never mind.
Have you ever heard of a Big Mac at McDonald's?
Yes.
Do you know what it's made of?
No.
Okay. All right, Jack, that's good because you failed on both counts, so that's actually impressive.
All right. Allison, final contestant, you want to walk over there and ask those police officers?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay, good. Allison, let's find out whether or not
Hello, officer.
She's got an outstanding warrant.
There's a new survey out that wonders whether or not Americans can name any of the Ten Commandments. Can you name any of the Ten Commandments?
Thou shalt not steal.
Thou shalt not steal. That's good. A police officer knows that, yes.
Covet thy neighbor.
Good one. Lie.
That's enough.
Yeah?
The Lord's name in vain.
The Lord's name in vain. Okay, I think you're melding some. Meanwhile.
Allison, thou shalt not double park. Let's go. Come on. Good job, guys.
Thanks, officer.
Very good.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt your breakfast.
Well, look at that. Allison, very impressive that first guy knew
He knew more than five. We did. That was impressive. And then he also knew all the ingredients to a Big Mac. We'll be out here doing more research, which may involve having to eat a Big Mac to really confirm the ingredients.
Right. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So how do you account for this? The first thing I thought, obviously, was, well, you know, if you're older than about 30, you remember the commercial. And if you're not older than 30, go on YouTube and put in Big Mac and you'll find the commercial. You remember the commercial where all the ingredients of the Big Mac were named as part of the song, and we all learned it, we all sang it, and then so we'll all forever know on our deathbeds. All of us tired baby boomers on our deathbeds will be praying the seven ingredients of the Big Mac rather than the Ten Commandments, because we don't know the Ten Commandments.
Can you sing it?
Sure.
Do it.
The Big Mac song?
Yeah.
It's two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
You didn't sing it.
I don't permit singing, except Dave Berger can sing on here, and Eric and Polly Rapp can sing on here. And other than that, no one sings. Not you. Not you. On issues, this is not a singing program. Although if I were to sing it, there'd be... The phone lines would go crazy with requests for me to sing other things, too. Like Thunder Road. That's the song I sing when I'm driving into work. If you ever pass me on the highway and you see my lips moving, I'm singing Thunder Road. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And for those of you who are less than 20 years old, if you want to know what Thunder Road is, again, go to YouTube and enter Thunder Road, and you'll probably find the song. Greatest song ever written.
You know, speaking of age, mm-hmm. It's kind of scary. We're going out doing these remotes, and our listeners are starting to become a lot younger than we are.
Infants, mere infants, yes.
No, what's that all about?
It's called getting older, Jeff. Get used to it. So how do you account for the fact that 14% of Americans can name any of the Ten Commandments? 28% of Americans can name all of the ingredients of the Big Mac. They may not want to eat it. They may not be interested in having it for lunch, but they can name the ingredients. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. And did you notice what I noticed when just the anecdotal man on the street recording that we played for you there a little bit ago? The commandments that people can name and the commandments that people can't name. What does it tell you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. Here's Charlotte calling from her car. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi.
What's up?
To all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
Take that, Wilkin.
I just sang on your show.
Yep. All right. See, I let the ladies do it because I'm a nice guy. Charlotte, can you name the Ten Commandments without checking?
You know, I don't think I could name all of them without checking.
Give it
but
a shot.
I can name a lot of them.
No, give it a shot.
Oh, don't make me do this.
No, come on. If you can sing the song on the radio, you can name.
Thou shalt not kill.
All right.
Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife.
All right.
Thou shalt not commit adultery.
All right.
Thou shalt not, ooh, help me out here, I'm driving.
Charlotte, you want to sing the song again?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you got 1, 2, 3. I'm going to give you one.
I know them in my heart, I'm just not good at memorizing on the radio.
All right, Charlotte. Well, yeah, there is pressure on the radio. Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
Now, I think most people would say that. Now, not to get down on Charlotte, but I think most people say, I know them, I just can't say them. But see, my dad taught me very early, you cannot know what you do, you cannot understand what you do not know. I say, well, I know the Ten Commandments. All right, then say them. If I said, I know your phone number, but I couldn't say it or dial it, when necessary, then I don't know your phone number. I think it's pretty basic to say that if someone doesn't know, can't say something, then they don't know it. Certainly you can't understand what you don't know. Let's see. Barb is calling from St. Peter's. Hi, Barb.
I'm trying to turn off my radio here. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well.
Good. So am I. I just wanted to make the comment that I haven't heard anyone mention the first three commandments yet.
Can you name the first three commandments, Barb?
I believe I can. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. And remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy.
Why do you think it is, and that's what I noticed too, why do you think it is that, and I've heard a bunch of pieces on this Ten Commandments, Big Mac ingredients thing.
Mm-hmm.
When people try to name the commandments, the ones they never name, seldom name, are those three. Why do you think that is, Barb?
Well, I can only guess, and that is, those are the, first of all, those are the center of all the commandments. If you keep the first one, you keep them all. But maybe they don't mention them because God isn't in their consciousness. I don't know.
Barb, thank you very much. What about the rest of you? Why is it that when people try to name the Ten Commandments, they can name steal and kill and adultery, and there's always covet my neighbor's wife, and they can maybe name obedience to father and mother, but seldom do they remember or are able to recall the first three? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. We're coming to you live this Thursday, the 1st of November.
Now, I've heard you talk about a movement called Pietism on this show quite a bit, and I've heard you say something, I also read it in an article in the Issues Etc. Journal, that Pietism emphasizes the second table of God's law, or the last seven commandments, over the first three. What do you mean?
Well, it's
by
not
that?
Only Pietism, it's liberalism too. Liberalism, Pietism, virtually every aberration, every error, big error, we're talking about the big ticket item errors in Christian theology, emphasize the second table of the commandment over the first. That is what we would call the ones having to do with how you live your everyday life, or at least that's the way we think of these, as the practical ones. I put my quotes around that, the practical ones, like do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not kill, do not covet, do not bear false witness. The liberal Christians have emphasized this over, you shall have no other gods before me. Do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, and remember the Sabbath day. And it's true that that movement called Pietism, which is not only a 19th century, 17th, 18th, 19th century phenomenon, but a 21st century phenomenon, probably to a greater degree than it ever was before, puts the emphasis in Christian theology on the second table of the commandments and pretty much forgets the first. Pietism is that thing that defines religion as the stirring in your heart, that special feeling you get down deep inside, whether you call it the joy, or Jesus, or whatever you want to call it. Pietism is all about the inward religious experience. It measures everything by that inward religious experience. Let's see what Janet has to say. She's calling from her car. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. In response to why people don't name the first three commandments, in my opinion, it's because all the evangelists preach morals, and they don't really go to where they teach the morals and not the godly side of life. And I think that way they just automatically forget it. It's never taught to them. And I don't think that they learn young enough. They don't take catechesis, and their parents don't think it's important. They just think, well, if I don't kill anybody, then I'm not such a bad person. If I don't commit adultery, just because I think of it doesn't mean it's a sin. It's all about morals and not about living a godly life these days.
So how can they teach morals without teaching the Ten Commandments?
Well, I think that's easy to do. I mean, how many people obviously know what's right and what's wrong, but they don't know the Ten Commandments? So the two aren't necessarily tied together unless you're a Christian and it's just part of your inward nature.
Thank you very much, Janet. Well, St. Paul says that we do know the Ten Commandments, that they are written on our heart. while we might not articulate them in exactly the same order that they are, and that's another question I've got for you. Because most people, if you say, if you gave them the Ten Commandments as a jigsaw puzzle, right? All of them, just gave them to them. Here are the Ten Commandments. Put them in the order you think they come in the Bible. What order do you think they'd put them in? Which do you think they would make the first commandment? If you gave them all the Ten Commandments. Clay's calling from his car. Hi, Clay.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Very well.
Good. I just wanted to comment on what you'd mentioned on the first three commandments. While I guess the general public does not remember them, and I think it has to do with the first three commandments has to do with our relationship with God, and the remaining commandments have to do with our relationship to one another. And so
what does that say to you, Clay? That people can remember the second part, but not the first.
Well, the second part, I think people and I think it's even brought about in the public school level. You can see when you visit the public schools, be kind to one another, respect one another, be nice and things like that. Well, you can be kind, you can be respectful, and you can be nice, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a Christian. And the first three commandments have to do with our relationship with God. In this case, Jesus Christ is our personal Lord and Savior, and it goes to show you that the general American people or public really do not have that relationship with a God, specifically Jesus Christ.
Clay, thank you very much, Clay. He's certainly right that the public schools will emphasize the second table of the commandments. That is, those things that emphasize man's relationship to man, which actually, in my opinion, is a good thing. I don't think public schools have any business dealing with those first three commandments. Who God is, how his name is to be regarded, and how are we to attend to his word. That's not the public school's business, to tell you the truth. But as long as we're talking about institutions that only emphasize being kind to one another, nice to one another, and being nice people, that could be many. Christian churches on a Sunday morning. You don't have to go all the way down the street to the public school. Stop on the way to the local Pop American Christian church, and you'll find exactly that same kind of moralistic preaching there. Which also explains why Christians, when asked to name the Ten Commandments, just can't seem to remember the first three. They may not even know they exist. Dennis is calling from St. John's, Michigan. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. You pretty much covered it so far between the two tables of the law, and the other part's been covered. I was just wondering, do you get extra credit if you can do the Reform version versus the Lutheran Roman Christian version?
What's the Reformed version?
Well, the Reformed version starts out with, you shall have no other gods. But the second commandment they list is, you shall make no graven image. Then they go into, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, and remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. They have four in the first table because they put the part in there about the graven image, which is one of the reasons why you rarely see a crucified cross in one of their churches.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Thanks for listening to Michigan. Right. The common misunderstanding that is created by different ways of numbering, there's more than two different ways of numbering the Ten Commandments. And while the Bible, the reason for this is that Christians have variously tried to understand what the Ten Commandments are supposed to be. What's the first? Where does the first and where does the second begin? It's usually around the first and second commandment. Because Scripture doesn't tell us which one is the first and which one's the second. It simply tells us which the first one is. It doesn't tell us which the second is. It just says that there are 10 commandments, 10 things, and then it has a list of things in which you could tease out more than 10 stuff, 10 pieces of information. So it's been a confusion for at various times in the church's history. And in the end, it doesn't matter how you number them as long as you have all of them intact. And those who do not make graven images a distinct commandment unto itself do not deny that graven images belongs under the first commandment.
Do you remember when we did that series a couple of years ago on the Sunday Night National syndicated edition of Issues, etc., on the Ten Commandments, taking one commandment week by week? Remember that?
I remember it.
And what was the first question we always asked was, have you broken this commandment?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the second question we always had to ask in that series?
I forget.
Why do we number them? Why do we call second commandment?
Yeah, we'd get...
Because most of our audience wasn't Lutheran or Roman Catholic.
We bring the guest on, and the first question we say, have you kept this commandment? And our guests, good, faithful, scriptural Christians, all of them said, no, I have not kept it, which is the right answer, by the way. Only the Pharisees answer the question yes, but the Christians answer no. And the second one was always, why do we number it this way? People get caught up in the numbers for some reason. Although I stand by what I said before, if you were to ask the average Christian to take the Ten Commandments as individual little lists of things and rearrange them in the order they think they go, the order they put them in might tell you as much as anything else. Might be very informative. Bob's calling from St. Louis. Thanks for waiting, Bob.
Hi. I used to work with Russian immigrants and became aware of a lot of regarding communism. They used to have their own Ten Commandments, which were pretty much the biblical Ten Commandments. However, the first commandment was to have no other loyalties other than the Soviet Union, which is certainly similar to have no other gods before you.
Interesting.
So they try to duplicate that loyalty, but they, in answer to your question, why do they reckon? Most people recognize the second table of the law first. I think it's because it's horizontal. It's what's in it for me.
Hmm. Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Could it also be, I'm just tossing this out there, could it also be that people think, well, the first three are less relevant to my everyday life? And so they don't remember them. You do only remember what you think is important. You only memorize what you think is important. Do you have your home address memorized? Yes, you do. Why? Because you consider it important. Do you have your phone number memorized? Yes, you do. Why? Because it's important. Do you have your credit card number memorized, along with the expiration date and that little number they stick on the back? Yes, you do. Why? Because it's important. Do you have your mother's birthday memorized? Of course you do, because you consider it to be important. We commit to memory those things that we consider to be important. Ann calls from Crestwood. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I've got the version from the late 50s, early 60s from the Catholic schools, and I'll go through them. It's, I'm the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have strange gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember, thou keep holy the Lord's day. Honor thy father and mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods.
That's the way I learned them. That's
verbatim, yeah.
Thank you very much. Was that from memory? She might have been reading. Who knows? I'll tell you a little secret. I didn't have them memorized in their order that they're supposed to come completely so I could get it cold, wake me up in the middle of the night, and say the Ten Commandments. Until my first year as a parish pastor. May say that I didn't consider them that important up until that point. We'll be right back.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Your favorite programs on AM 850 KFUO are made possible in part by the generosity of supporters like Erna and Ralph Hallemeyer of Bethalto, Illinois, Barbara Hartung of St. Louis, Missouri, Orville and Janie Hayden of Mason, Illinois, and Gloria Heiletag of Barnhart, Missouri. At AM 850 KFUO, we appreciate the prayerful and financial support you show with your gifts.
Every day there are debates in the media, on college campuses, and even in churches about the great moral questions of our day. On the next Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson opens his heart and lets you know why issues like abortion and traditional marriage are so important to him, and why they should be important to your family, too. That's on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
The universe, is it expanding? Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible Upholding Ministry of Answers in Genesis. Well, Ken, I've heard that the universe is supposedly expanding. Now, is that evidence to support the Big Bang and the beliefs of so-called progressive creationists?
Well, Mark, astronomers have found that distant galaxies all appear to be moving away from us. And in fact, the further away a galaxy is, the faster it appears to be moving away. It's as if all space is being stretched out and expanded. Now, the Big Bang did not predict this expansion. In fact, secular scientists invented the Big Bang to try to explain the expansion, so you can't use it as evidence for the Big Bang. But of course, there's lots of other problems with the Big Bang anyway. You see, there are several verses in the Bible that talk about the universe being expanded or stretched out. For example, in Isaiah 40, the Bible says God stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. And in Job 9, it says that God alone stretches out the heavens. You know, when these passages were first written, I wonder if people found them difficult to believe. After all, you look up at the night sky, it doesn't look like it's being stretched out. But it wasn't until the 1920s that astronomers using powerful telescopes confirmed the universe is expanding, the Bible is right.
Do you think it's possible that astronomers will ever find extraterrestrial life? We tackle that intriguing question in a free booklet, available on our website, answersradio.com.
Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana invites you to join Issues Etc. regular guest Arthur Just, Larry Rast, and Carl Schalk for the Good Shepherd Institute, November 4th through the 6th on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary. This annual conference equips laypeople, musicians, and pastors to better serve their congregations through music and the Word. For more information on the Good Shepherd Institute, check out our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 260-452-2256.
November is Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month. During the Fall Research Update, November 5th, renowned researchers will be discussing the latest advancements in diagnosis and treatment of Alzheimer's disease. Get the facts and meet the experts at the annual Research Update, Monday, November 5th. Register by calling 1-800-980-9080 or by visiting www.azlstl.org.
Hi, this is Chuck Rathard, host of The Bible Study. One of the things I love to do is meet our AM850 KFUO listeners. And one of the best ways to do that is to take our program on the road. So I invite you to come to Timothy Lutheran Church in St. Louis on Thursday, November 8th. Our guest that day for our assigned text in Genesis will be the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Dr. Gerald Kieschnick. I hope to see you there Thursday, 10:05 a.m. at Timothy in St. Louis.
We've all seen the news about those wildfires. Tragic story over the weekend that at least one of these big fires was started by an arsonist, and the need that it has created there in Southern California is almost unimaginable. People moved out of their homes, and then a lot of damage done, people displaced. LCMS World Relief is aware of that need, and they want you to be aware of it as well, and the work that they're doing to meet those needs. Find out more about what LCMS World Relief is doing to help the victims of those California wildfires by going to our website tonight, issuesetc.org, or you can earmark a donation through LCMS World Relief for the victims of those fires. Just earmark it as California Fires and call 1-888-930-4438. 1-888-930-4438. Remember Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. It's Audio Open Lines, the last half hour of the program, coming to you live this Thursday, November the 1st. Our call-in numbers are 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Wouldn't you love to hear this question posed to the people running for president of the United States who all profess to be Christians other than Mitt Romney?
The Ten Commandments question?
Yes. And then they pool their – see if they all of them in his group can come up with all ten.
You know, I bet you Mitt Romney probably could get them all. I bet you he could. And he's the Mormon.
Huckabee probably could. He's a Southern Baptist pastor.
That's true. That's true. But he's been out of practice for a while.
I'm not just thinking Republicans. I'm thinking both sides of the aisle. It would be a great question.
Ask him which one they think is most important.
Well,
ask them to put it in order.
But have all that, you know, what is there? How many people on the Republican or Democratic side? They can all pool together. It's like, say Senator Clinton could get 3, Senator Obama, you know, just all of them together. See if they can come up with all 10 of them.
That would be great. Although I don't know how relevant it would be for the fact that they want to be president.
But they all, because they're using their Christian identity.
That's true.
To help get them.
You know what I think their standard answer would be? Their standard answer would be, the Ten Commandments for me are an article of faith, and I don't feel it's necessary to impose them on other people. Well, can you name them? Yes, I could, but I prefer not to, because I wouldn't want... I want the American people want a person of faith in the White House. They're not particularly concerned about what faith that might be. It'd be interesting to watch them dodge the question. I mean, if I were handling one of those candidates, the last thing in the world I would do is advise them to answer that question.
Even if they knew it?
Well, if they knew them, yes.
Right.
But they sure as heck better know them, don't you think?
But your advisor's not going to be there on the stage when Tim Russert asks you that question. That would just see how many they all as a group.
We should
can
probably
come up
email
with.
Tim Russert and just suggest that next time he's in charge of the debates. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issue ZTC at KFUO.org. Although people could hardly feel like they're missing out on something when only 14% of Americans can name a portion of the Ten Commandments. Greg's calling from his car. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great discussion. Wanted some clarification because what comes to my mind as far as my shamedly, my excuse, I can tell you right now, there's no way I could name them all 10. But the reason why my excuse, sad as it may be, is there are many, many commandments in, you know, Deuteronomy alone that I couldn't possibly memorize. Why would the 10 be the ones that I should memorize?
That's a great question, Greg. That's a great question. Well, first of all, those are the ones that God gave in his original giving of the law, before he gave any other commands explicitly to his people in the Old Testament. The ones that he wrote on those tables, on those tablets of stone for his people, that he considered to be the shape of the covenant that he made with them, were the Ten Commandments. I think that's the biggest reason. They also are the ones most referenced in the New Testament. When Jesus goes to talk about the law, he asks, what's the law? And people start naming the Ten Commandments to him. He meets the rich young ruler, and he says, you know the commandments. And he names some of them, and they're all part of the Ten Commandments. I guess Greg's question really is, why do the Ten Commandments rise above all the others? Well, because these are the commandments that are the summary of the whole law. Whatever else is included in Scripture by way of God's commands, they are all summarized and found in those Ten Commandments. If you don't believe me, just try. Go wherever you want to in the Bible and find me a commandment that is not in some shape, matter, or form summarized and or explicitly stated in the Ten Commandments. It is a perfect summary of God's will. It leaves nothing out. Nothing. Period. But you're right, Greg. I mean, and I'm glad to hear you admit that it's an excuse. It's like someone coming home with help for their math homework. The kid comes home and you say, well, Junior, didn't you memorize your times tables? Isn't that kind of part and parcel of being a student in this math class? And Junior says, well, heck, have you seen my math book? It's 500 pages long. And I didn't memorize the times tables because there's a lot of stuff in there that I didn't bother to memorize. And since I could never memorize all of it, I'm not going to memorize any of it. Now, could you function in life without knowing your times tables? That's what they used to call multiplication tables. Could you function in life on a regular basis without knowing at least some of it? Do you remember these things? 1 and 1 is 1, and 1 and 2 is 2, and 2 and 2 is 4, and all those things that make up the multiplication tables. Let's not even talk about the multiplication tables because probably like the Ten Commandments, most people couldn't tell you what 5 times 6 is. How about the alphabet? I dare say every literate person in the United States has the alphabet memorized. Now, they might not be able to alphabetize, but they have the alphabet memorized. Could you function in life without the alphabet? You say, well, no. Why would you memorize the alphabet when there are so many other things in the English language that you never will memorize? Why would you memorize something as simple as the alphabet? It might have something to do with the fact that the alphabet is the basis upon which all the rest of our language is built. Believe it or not, when you go to learn a foreign language that has a different alphabet, you know what the first thing you learn is? The alphabet, the new alphabet, because you can't read without it. You can't sound out your words. You can't form sentences. The ABCs are, in sports, they call it fundamental. The Ten Commandments are the same thing. They are the ABCs of God's will.
How would you respond to somebody say, it's not important that I know God's law, I know his gospel?
Well, you can't know one without the other. You
well,
cannot.
You could say, yeah, Jesus saves me from my sins.
What are your sins? What sin? What sin?
I probably don't pray as much as I should. I probably don't care for love my no I won't say the loving your enemies, they probably wouldn't push it that far. I probably don't care for my neighbor. I'm probably not the best wife or husband I could be.
Why are those things wrong as opposed to anything else? Why are those sins? Where are you getting this idea that those things are sinful?
Somewhere in the Bible.
Where?
I don't know.
You obviously don't read your Bible as well as you should either, right?
Yes, I don't.
Yes.
But the bigger issue I'm trying to get at is maybe people are bored with hearing the forgiveness of sins.
Maybe.
Because they're not hearing God's law, and they haven't wrestled with the righteous demands of God's law and thought, word, and deed.
Well, you've hit the nail right on the head. The reason we were talking earlier about law and gospel when we were reviewing that sermon by Pastor Bill Swirla, and someone called in and said, "You know, what do I do when my pastor doesn't preach law and gospel?" Well, it's no wonder if he won't preach the law, then he's not going to preach the gospel. And if he can preach something as a substitute for the law, he's going to have a substitute for the gospel too. Because the two go together. They are always distinguished but can never be separated from one another. You know the greatest reason why Christians ought to know the Ten Commandments? The greatest reason. Not the only, but the greatest reason. They show you exactly what Jesus did for you. The Ten Commandments show you what Jesus did for you. You say, how can that be? They're the law. The law doesn't show us what Jesus did for us. Well, the Ten Commandments do, because they function not only as law, but as a perfect picture of perfect obedience. And that's exactly what Jesus rendered to the Father in your place. He rendered perfect obedience. And what did that perfect obedience look like? I think Pastor Swirla even preached that when we reviewed that sermon. He even went through the Ten Commandments. Perfect obedience looks like the Ten Commandments. Another good reason it should be memorized. It really functions in two ways for the Christian. One, the Ten Commandments shows us what God expects of us by way of perfect obedience, and that we have not kept them. And then it shows us what Christ did in our place. The kind of obedience that he rendered to the Father, the kind of obedience that ended him up on the cross as our substitute. Those are two, as far as I'm concerned, two indispensable reasons for knowing the Ten Commandments. You know the shape of your own sin, and you know the shape of Christ's obedience in your place. Which is why, and I think it's rightly said in a previous interview this week, it's rightly said that the good news of what Christ did for us in his perfect life, death, and resurrection doesn't render the law, the Ten Commandments, obsolete. It fulfills them. The shape of Christ's obedience in our place was exactly the Ten Commandments. This is the one who came and in our place feared, loved, trusted God above all things. Really, I guess you could say he kept the first commandment perfectly. And so there was no need for him to bother with any of the others. He kept the first commandment perfectly. How tragic is it that Christians can't name the first commandment? After all, it's the shortest. Have no other gods before me. Why can't they name it? Maybe they're avoiding the obvious, that if we could keep the first, the others would be unnecessary, and because we break the first, we're always breaking all the others. Or to put it a different way, when we break all those others, steal, cheat, lie, adultery, all of the other commandments that we can name, we're only showing that we are in fact breaking the first. We are not fearing, loving, and trusting God above all things, the first commandment. And what Jesus did when he came in our human flesh was to fear, love, and trust God above all things in our place. Well, a church in Kansas that protests soldiers' funerals because they believe that these deaths on the battlefield are God's judgment against America for tolerating homosexuality has been given a heavy fine, this church has. Here's the story from the Associated Press.
A series of church protests at military funerals has sparked outrage in communities across the country. Now a Maryland court has ordered the Westboro Baptist Church to pay $11 million to the father of a Marine who was killed in Iraq. Church members protested outside Matthew Snyder's funeral last year. Snyder's father claimed the protest intruded upon what should have been a private ceremony. The Kansas-based church believes U.S. deaths in Iraq are punishment for the country's tolerance for homosexuality. The church says the First Amendment protects its right to protest.
The world will look over at America and its vaunted First Amendment and mock them because this is what they think of religious liberty.
It's not clear whether Snyder's family will be able to collect the damages because the church assets are less than $1 million. The church isn't worried about having to come up with the money.
We'll cross those bridges when we get to it. We're not sweating any of that. Like I said, it's irrelevant.
Congress has passed a law prohibiting protests like Westboro's at federal cemeteries. Carlotta Bradley, The Associated Press.
It's interesting that this church that wants to tout its freedom of speech rights, and there's nothing wrong with that, are not really particularly interested in abiding by the law when the courts rule against them. I mean, if you're going to uphold the law in one respect, the freedom of speech, it would seem that you'd want to uphold the law in every respect. Doesn't it? I mean, they're all about upholding the law. They say that America is being judged by deaths on the battlefield because it hasn't upheld God's law. Well, the leader of this church and of his few followers that have been protesting at these funerals of fallen veterans is the Reverend Fred Phelps. Here's a story from CNN.
Fred Phelps is on his way to another military funeral, laughing at all the people trying to silence him.
It's like popping popcorn. Here goes the colonel. Pow! Here goes the colonel. Pow! This state, that state.
He says that's how lawmakers are reacting to the military funeral protests Phelps and his family have launched. They believe U.S. soldiers deserve to die because they fight for a country that tolerates homosexuality. Now, four states have recently passed laws that restrict how close Phelps and his family can be to the funerals. Another dozen states are considering similar laws.
If those guys knew how I'm appreciative of this work they're doing, I think they'd quit doing it just for spite.
You crossed the line! Now God is your enemy!
The Phelps family says it has picketed more than 100 military funerals since last summer. But because of these new laws, the Phelps say they'll stay away from funerals in Wisconsin, Missouri, Indiana, and Oklahoma, but not for long. Several family members are attorneys who say these laws violate their First Amendment right to free speech.
I want Congress to pass a law that says I can't picket, so we can immediately get it all brought to the nation's attention in one gulp.
Give me a hero. Give me a hero.
The protests have sparked great outrage. They carry signs that read, "Thank God for IEDs," and "Thank God for dead soldiers." The message is so callous, nasty, and disruptive, it inspired a group of motorcycle riders from around the country to show up in support of the military families.
Keep peace.
Randy Wendling lost a son in Iraq. He still struggles to understand how anyone could be so mean-spirited. Today, he welcomed the news that these new laws might be slowing down the Phelps family.
Families that are mourning should have the freedom to privacy, to mourn the loss of their loved one. And it's very important that if this situation would ever rise again, that the people would be protected.
The Phelps family says it will continue picketing legally. These new laws won't slow them down because they say there are plenty of other funerals in other places that will get their attention now.
Love it. You gotta love it.
Ed Lavandera, CNN, Dallas.
I think he just likes the attention, to tell you the truth. I mean, that's my opinion, but I think he just likes the attention. You know, kids do this. The childlike will misbehave to get attention, even if it's negative attention. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. We've been hearing about Fred Phelps and his family for some time now, and I think the last time we talked about him, everyone was of the same mind that this isn't the way to go about it. But there was some tension, if I remember correctly, among our listeners as to how we are to understand. They seem to rightly oppose homosexuality, but do it in the wrong way. So how should they go about it? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. You know, the Da Vinci Code talked about the Knights Templar a lot. They made a lot of hay, Dan Brown did, about this apparently secret group in medieval Roman Catholicism that held the secret, kept the secret of what the church was really all about over against the big PR blitz that we call Christian history. Well, very recently, a Vatican document on the Knights Templar was published. And the issue is, was it really kept secret? Was this all a big conspiracy? Here's the story.
Let me ask you about those myths about the Templars, and that is, did they really have the Holy Grail? Were they the protectors of the Holy Grail?
Not at all, no. No evidence whatsoever. That's mind you, the Holy Grail itself is a medieval myth, but the Templars had really nothing at all to do with it. Dan Brown has a very fertile imagination. Although, on the other hand, I mean, the whole business about the Templar, and you know about Freemasons, of course. Well, Freemasons were... they invented a backstory, about, as it were, when they came into existence, probably the end of the 17th or the beginning of the early 18th century. They invented a backstory for themselves in the middle of the 18th century and claimed descent from the Templars. But, I mean, there's absolutely no evidence.
Let me ask you about, back to the document itself. What does it tell us about the Templars?
Well, it doesn't tell us a great deal, frankly, that we didn't know already. What it is an account of the trial before the Pope, because the Pope ordered the trial, Clement V ordered the trial of the Templars, really under pressure from the King of France. The King of France, for reasons of his own, wanted the Templars suppressed. And he put a lot of pressure on the Pope, who was actually living in France and was indeed himself French, to put the Templars on trial. He wanted them suppressed. The Pope tried to prevent that, and this trial actually says they're not guilty of the things that the King of France said they were. The King of France said they were heretics, and this document clearly says the Templars weren't heretics, though they had some very peculiar practices which were, I suppose, questionable at the time. And so, for instance, their initiation ceremonies and that sort of thing. So there was a lot of reason to look at them with suspicion, but they were certainly not heretics.
So why are these documents so important?
Well, to be honest, I don't think they are important. I think the Vatican is is simply using this as an opportunity to raise money. The money that is being raised by this publication is going into the preservation of more documents from the archives. I mean, I know it does sound sinister when they talk about the secret archives of the Vatican, but you have to remember that the word secret in Latin, secretum, the archivium secretum of the Vatican, that simply means the private papers of the Pope. Secretum means private.
All right, this is quite disappointing. We've always been intrigued by the Templars. What, do they really still exist?
Well, a lot of people, if you put your point your browser, as they say, at the word Templar, you'll get all sorts of curious organizations which are claiming the title, most of them sort of right-wing Catholics. But they, no, they, there's no survival whatsoever. They, a lot of them, in France anyway, were put to death. But outside France, they seem to have survived.
Well, lo and behold, after selling, how many books did Dan Brown sell? Still selling? And a movie? Lo and behold, when the Vatican finally publishes its secret papers about the Knights Templar, it's pretty much what it looked like from the beginning. Kind of a private club of these guys during the times of the Crusades, and they didn't have a lot of secrets to keep. That's an awful small amount of material to work from. But you, when you disregard the truth about the true nature of Christianity, what's a little fib about the Knights Templar? When you disregard the truth about who Jesus Christ was and is and what he came into the world to be and to do, what's a little twisting of history when it comes to this secret group of knights under the papacy? I mean, the real danger of something like the Da Vinci Code or Dan Brown's revision of Christian history has nothing to do with the Knights Templar. It has everything to do with the alternate Jesus that he presented to his readers. And sad to say, many of his readers bought it hook, line, and sinker. Just remember, and this is the kind of scholarship one would expect from Dan Brown, before he wrote the Da Vinci Code, he was a high school English teacher. Issues, etc. is underwritten in part locally by Concordia University St. Louis Center, where classes are designed to meet your, designed to meet around your busy schedule. You know, maybe Dan Brown could have benefited from finishing that degree or going and getting a degree in history before. He probably wouldn't have written the book if he had a degree in history. Concordia University St. Louis Center, night, one night a week is when they meet, so you can pursue that associate's, that bachelor's, that MBA. Find out more about them at our website, issuesetc.org, or give them a call, 314-984-8840, 314-984-8840, Concordia University St. Louis Center, professional education with a personal touch, 314-984-8840. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about numbers in the Bible. I don't know if you're looking for some big code, if you're looking for some big scheme that can give you secret meaning in the Bible, it's probably not the hour for you. Although if you want to know when a number is just a number and when it symbolizes something greater, has a theological significance, tune in tomorrow, our conversation with Dr. David Adams will not disappoint. Then Sunday night on the program, Dr. Peter Scare will join us to talk about eternal punishment, otherwise known as hell. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.